Jerry, 11? Okay. So we'll just start right. An evil man seeketh only rebellion. Therefore, a cruel messenger shall be sent against him. Okay, rebellion towards what? An evil man. Doctrinally, the Antichrist seeketh only rebellion. The letter T takes us to 1 Samuel 15:23, where it says, rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft. And that's associated with King Saul, and King Saul is a type of the Antichrist in that he was trying to murder somebody who is a type of Jesus Christ, David. Okay, now this idea of rebellion, a lot of times, you know, kids rebel against their parents and things like that, and people would rebel against the establishment, things like that. And we got to realize the big picture. What Satan often does is he divides us to conquer us, where people think the two political factions in our country is Democrat, Republican. And so they see the differences between those and fuss about those two, and they don't realize that they're on the same team. And the same thing goes in all realms. And if we could see the huge, the big picture, back in the 60s, the insiders got the races to start fighting. You see, and they think that's, you know, we're fussing about this, fussing about that. They're dividing us to conquer us. And the thing is, we got to look through these things. Every one of us has in our nature that if somebody says don't touch, we automatically want to touch it. I put a track together one time and a cover it said, don't pick this up. Knowing that if you see a piece of paper and it says don't pick it up, what is the human nature going to want to do? Pick it up. Okay, so the thing is if we're going to rebel, which we all do, why don't we rebel against the right thing? Or the right thing to rebel against? Who? Rebel against Satan. Rebel against him trying to control us. Instead of rebelling against the one who loves us, why don't we rebel against the one who hates us? And you see, go against the establishment as far as conforming to the New World Order because they hate you and I. But in this verse, it's talking about rebelling against God. An evil man seeketh only rebellion. Therefore, a cruel messenger shall be sent against them. So, dog eat dog, survival of the fittest. Verse 12, let the bear robbed of her whelps meet a man rather than a fool in his folly. Okay, so it shows what happens when you meet a fool, and the number one fool will be Satan himself and the Antichrist. Verse 13, whoso rewardeth evil for good, evil shall not depart out of or from his house. Self-explanatory. Don't bite the hand that feeds you. Doctrinally, this will be aimed at the Antichrist, Psalms 109. The Psalms 109 is often known as an imprecatory prayer. It's a prayer of destruction. It's a doctrinal prayer against the Antichrist. Psalms 109, verse 4, he says, for my love, they are my adversaries, but I give myself unto prayer, and that they have rewarded me evil for good, and hatred for my love. Set thou a wicked man over him, and let Satan stand at his right hand. When he shall be judged, let him be condemned. Let his prayer become sin. Let his days be few, and let another take his office. Let his children be fatherless, and his wife a widow. Let his children be continually vagabonds and beg. Let them seek their bread also out of the desolate places. Let the extortioner catch all that he hath, and let the stranger spoil his labor. You see, if somebody's praying for you, you sure hope they're not praying that. Okay, but that's a prayer against the Antichrist. It's the Lord's praying against the Antichrist. Historically, it's David praying against his enemies. Old Testament, they did that, and I could expect God to answer their prayers. In the New Testament, we are to pray for them that despitefully use you. Have a different format on that thing. Okay, verse 14. The beginning of strife is as one letteth out water. Therefore, leave off contention before be meddled with. Beginning of strife, it's like you see a little pinhole in the dike. A little pinhole, you think, it's just a little seeping of water. It don't really matter. And then that little seeping of water goes into a muskrat hole. And then you see a drinking fountain coming out the muskrat hole. And then all of a sudden, boom, there goes the dike. Okay, down in one of the fields of Dad's place down there by where Glenn Peterson's house is, there's a singleton coming through there, and Ronnie was standing on that top of that bank one time. And all of a sudden, boom, he dropped down right into that thing because it was a gopher hole down through there. And that dike was so, that bank was so water-soaked because the water was so high. And all of a sudden, you do all you can and throw everything you can to stop the thing. But the power of water is phenomenal. I mean, just see what happened with that tsunami and all that stuff. Just the power of that. How far did anybody know how far that actually came on shore? Brother Larry? It went 2 or 3 miles that far? In certain areas. Yeah, I didn't know how far it came in the shore. But the power of water, can you imagine what the flood was all about? The power of that thing, pushing them rocks up top mountains and things like that. If you saw some of the footage when the Mississippi banks broke, you know, and it comes in and all of a sudden there goes a house and a grain bin and everything just gone. Okay, so the idea here is solve the little problems. Why wait till they're big? And the illustration you can use in gardening, a lot of times you look at your garden, it looks fine, but yet you can see a little weed about that tall. It's just a little thing. And see, all it does is when you see that little weed that tall, you can take 2 fingers and pull it out. But procrastination goes on, and all of a sudden that thing's about this tall. And by the time you pull that out, then you yank the plant with it. And you see, and that's what often happens in churches where they let the things go and let the things go, and then all of a sudden they got to discipline somebody, and now you got 2 or 3 other members mad. Where I'm of the belief that the right kind of preaching will draw the right crowd and will repel the wrong crowd 90% of the time. You know, you'll have 10% the status where they just sit there and can't stand the preacher or the preaching, but they'll just sit there and put up with it for a while. And, of course, you just kind of watch Facebook, for instance, and you can just kind of see them going that way. And but that don't last real long. Okay, and the idea of meddling in other people's affairs. He that meddleth in somebody's affairs like one that taketh a dog by the ears. Now that didn't say rub the dog's ears, and that didn't say pull on his ears. That says take the dog by its ears. That means grabbing its ears and pulling it. Any dog that you do that to is eventually going to bite. And the thing is, you know, it's hard enough. I can't imagine people always sticking their nose in other people's business. I have a hard enough time keeping myself straight, let alone worrying about somebody else. Okay, so the beginning of strife, it's a very small thing, but it gets large. Therefore leave off contention before it be meddled with. He that justifieth the wicked, now this one you can obviously apply right into the court system. He that justifieth the wicked and he that condemneth the just, even they both are abomination to the Lord. Just look at America's court system. You know, and some, you know, I get emails, there's one Judicial Watch or something I get, and they think the court system is beyond repair. I don't know, maybe it is, I don't know. But it's obviously not a place where you find justice. Except when you spell it just us. And that's usually what they mean. And if you wanna experience any judge's wrath, just try running your own case. I mean, you will be fighting the judge and the prosecutor, everything involved. They think they're protecting their hide more than anything. And notice the Bible says they're an abomination to the Lord. Can you imagine them when they hit the judgment? I know what the Lord's going to do to them. Isaiah 23:9, he's going to hold them in contempt. They for years have threatened that. And most of the time when a judge holds or threatens the idea of contempt, it's a vain threat. But in Indiana, they hold you for contempt. They can put you in a pokey for 6 months.
Mm-hmm. But John Milan, who's in jail for not paying child support, doesn't have that luxury.
Right. He got out?
They pulled him out of court.
Oh, they put him back in. Okay. Isaiah 23:9, here's what that judge is going to hear at the judgment. Isaiah 23:9, the Lord of hosts hath purposed it to stain the pride of all glory and to bring into contempt all the honorable of the earth. Your honor. Your honorous. You know, I like the Three Stooges, you know, the one where they're in the court and the judge says, call me your honor, and he says, my honor, and all that stuff, you know, back and forth. If they'd have a sense of humor, you could have some fun in court, but they really don't have a sense of humor. None whatsoever. Okay, but the Lord says they're an abomination. The justice system in a country is probably one of the outward signs of destruction of a nation. Proper justice is what establishes the foundation of a nation. And that's what the Lord is going to, the first thing our Lord and Savior is going to do at the second coming of Christ is he's going to establish the judgment of the nations. Matthew 25. Right off the bat, he's going to establish the justice system. And it's going to be done right. Well, I'm looking forward to that day. I like to see how everything's supposed to be run. But the Lord says these people are an abomination. An abomination to him, verse 15. Verse 16, wherefore is there a price in the hand of a fool to get wisdom, seeing he hath no heart to it? There's most state colleges, most kids in the state colleges. They're paying all this money for this education. Education, if you call it that. Indoctrination, if you call it that. But they have no heart to it. The idea there in that verse, the question is, okay, all these people doing all this stuff trying to get wisdom, but yet in their heart, they really don't want the truth. They have no heart for it. And when they have no heart for it, they're not going to get it. It's not education, it's not intellect, it's not our mind that helps us to get the truth. It's our heart. It's a heart matter. Always has been, always will be. The Lord looks right into our heart. And he sees what's going on in that heart, and we can study and study and study and study all we want. And if that heart is not humble, and if it doesn't believe God, you're just going to study your eyeballs out. And the thing is, the Lord's going to check in. He's looking right into our heart. Man looks on the outward appearance, but God looks upon the heart. Now, this one is a parallel over to chapter 18, verse 1 and 2. And it says, through desire a man having separated himself, separates himself in a library, in a monastery, studying the books, seeketh and intermeddleth with all wisdom. A fool hath no delight in understanding, but that his heart may discover itself. His ideas of his studies is to justify himself. How can we know the truth? The Lord put it very simply in John chapter 7, verse 14. John chapter 7, verse, 15, 16, and 17. To me, this is great encouragement for the common man. You don't have to waste your money on college education. You know, I sat behind the desk for 5 years, and after I got done, realized, hey, I wasn't taught much Bible. And do it all again. John 7, verse 15. The Jews marveled, saying, how knoweth this man letters, having never learned? Jesus answered them and said, my doctrine is not mine, but his that sent me. If any man will do his will, he shall know of the doctrine, whether it be of God or whether I speak of myself. It's a willing heart. It's a willing heart. All a person has to have in order to understand this Bible is a willing heart and a humble mind. That's all we need. And you'll get this book. You start reading this book, and before you get reading it, you say, Lord, I can't figure it out. Lord, you got to give me something. You got to help me with this. I can't figure it out. You got to help me out. And you'll see more that way than you will looking in the lexicons. And Strong's Concordance, you know, and all this other stuff. Okay, so verse 16, they have a heart, they have no heart for the truth. Verse 17, a friend loveth at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. Okay, the word friend, splitter in half, fry, to the end. Now, America has a lot of fair-weathered friends. And a lot of churches that way, where they're fair-weathered friends, just as long as you meet their little criteria of spirituality. As soon as you step outside of their little criteria, what they think of spirituality, now you have become a heretic. Okay, a friend. A friend is somebody who walks in when everybody else walks out. Probably the people who have gone through much heartache are people that are in fundamental Baptist churches that have gone through unfortunate divorces, gone through a divorce situation. And the leadership has now said, oh, we feel for you, brother. We're praying for you, but you can't preach, teach, do anything else in this church. You're second class. I mean, that's the way it goes. I'm sorry about that. You know, it takes two. It takes two. You probably was hiding something in there. And then they blackball that person because of the divorce situation. These people are so shallow in their Bible study. First, they have forgotten that God himself got a divorce back in Jeremiah chapter 3, verse 8. God divorced Israel in the Old Testament. He gave Israel a writing of divorcement, Isaiah 50, verse 1. And look at what in Romans chapter 7. If you are saved, you personally have gone through a marriage and divorce as your salvation experience. You remember the Bible regulates divorce. It regulates it. And in Deuteronomy chapter 24, you have a man who puts away his wife for any cause. Then he gets a second wife. And once he gets a second wife, he cannot go back to the first wife. That's forbidden. Now here's a great doctrine of truth. Romans chapter 7, verse 1. This should tickle your fancy. Know ye not, brethren, for I speak to them that know the law. What law? Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and specifically Deuteronomy. So he's talking to people who know Deuteronomy. I speak to them and know the law, how that the law hath dominion over a man as long as he liveth. For the woman which hath an husband is bound by the law to her husband so long as he liveth. But if the husband be dead, she is loosed from the law of her husband. Loose meaning divorce. She's separated from him. So then, if while her husband liveth, she be married to another man, no divorce, nothing there, she shall be called an adulteress. But if her husband be dead, she is free from that law, so that she is no adulteress, though she be married to another man. That's the illustration. Now, how is our salvation? Next verse. Wherefore, my brethren, ye also are become dead to the law by the body of Christ, that ye should be married to another, even to him who is raised from the dead, that we should bring forth fruit unto God. For when we were in the flesh, the motions of sins, which were by the law, did work in our members to bring forth fruit unto death. But now we are delivered from the law, that being dead, wherein we were held, that we should serve in newness of spirit and not in the oldness of letter. What's he saying? Before you got saved, you have your body, soul, and spirit. You have a dead spirit. Dead in trespass and sin. Body and soul stuck together. Body and soul married. Stuck together. Bound. At the moment you got saved, your body died and your spirit came alive. Hence, your body and soul are divorced because you're dead to the law and your soul can be remarried to Christ. And the second marriage is more binding than the first. That's where eternal security comes in. You see, that's the idea of that Romans 7 thing. And you see, people that have gone through divorces, they have an insight into God's nature that others have not, because they know the pain they go through when somebody they love turns their back on them. And that's the pain God goes through when we turn our back on Him, the nation of Israel. They have an insight a lot of times in these things. And people need to realize, need to have grace. But by the grace of God, I've been married 25 years. That's the grace of God. It's like an older couple, they were married 50-some years, and somebody asked them, in all those 50 years of marriage, did he ever consider divorce? He said, no, murder, but never divorce. Now there's something to that. Okay, so a friend is someone that loves at all times. He loveth at all times. And a brother is born for adversity. Helping people going through the tough times. You know, many of us know about Ricky Newton. You know, he's sitting over there in Illinois. And Rick wisely had a meeting with the men before he got sent off. And when they first started coming to this church, they came like 3 Sundays in a row, I think, and then I didn't see them for 2 or 3 Sundays, and so Dad and I went and visited them. And Rick just looked at us and said, things aren't what they appear to be. And I said, well, what are they? And he gave the ugly story. And so I just looked at him and said, well, the Lord had you cross our path for a reason. We'll do all we can to help you. Why would we do that? The mercy of God. Why would I do something like that? What if I was in his shoes? You know, he's seen four or five folks, I think five people getting saved now. But he's still doing time. You know, sometimes the Lord takes our physical conveniences away because we're better off spiritually. And Rick is better off spiritually at this point. It's still hard. Still hard. You know, it's hard on his wife and children. So we need to put ourselves in the position of other people and care for them, love them. A brother is born for adversity. Okay, 18. A man void of understanding striketh hands and becometh surety in the presence of his friend. Often this is used for not co-signing and things like that. You can see somebody has struck up a bargain. They've struck up a deal. It used to be in America that your handshake was as good as your bond. Not anymore. Okay, now the idea here is when you draw up a contract with somebody, it has to have a meeting of the minds in order to be a valid contract. Now, we make a lot of contracts in our society without the meeting of the minds, and somehow they seem to be still valid. Example, the Social Security number. You know, they didn't tell any of us at the time of the entanglement that involves with that. There's no meeting of the minds, so I'm up thinking that's an invalid contract. No meeting of the minds. Church and corporations is another thing. Churches don't understand what's entailed with the incorporation status. They've never been told the entanglement involved in those things. It's an invalid contract. See, a lot of contracts are that way. A banker, when he makes a purported loan, he does not tell the customer that he is going to make some numbers out of thin air, just grab them out of thin air, and put them in his account, and then he expects him to pay it back with interest. He doesn't tell him that. He makes the guy think that he's giving him a loan. It's not a loan. It's an exchange. They don't call it an exchange. I can show you their words in the Federal Reserve documents. They say in their literature, they're making it out of thin air, that American economic system is simply based on the confidence of the people in America. What happens if confidence goes away? Everything's gone away. It's all facade. It's all farce. Right? Yeah. So it's just amazing. The banker doesn't tell him that. He doesn't tell him the farce involved in a loan, so-called loan. They never say that. It's an invalid contract. You know, the credit card company doesn't tell you that. That they just create something out of thin air. The whole financial structure in America is based on a fraud. Every bit of it's based on a fraud. The Federal Reserve System. You know, 12 bankers, 12 families or whatnot, the Bilderbergers. And so, you know, when a person, before you sign anything, read it. And if you don't like what's in it, cross it out. You know, a lot of times Americans are so conditioned. Somebody throws something in front of their face and they sign this here. Well, what's it say? Well, it says this and this and this. You know, Ashley got her license the other day. So, ladies put something in front of me and she says, you need a sign right here. And so, I'm reading it. Then she looked at Ashley and said, oh, that's good that he's reading it. Of course, if I'm going to put my signature down, well, then she threw something in front of Ashley. She said, sign this, and Ashley just signed it. And then I said to Ashley, you read that next time. You got away with it here, but you don't sign anything without reading it. And then if you don't really like what's being said, you put under UCC 1-207 and all that stuff. Just Jim Hinden did that one time trying to get his driver's license, and they kicked him out of the Bureau of Motor Vehicles when he did that. But So a person has to be very cautious about these things. A man void of understanding striketh hands and becomes surety. Surety is another word for insurance. You can see how surety, sure, insurance. See, and that's becoming insurance. And the insurance, I hate insurance. The whole thing is just a big scam. I mean, and, you know, it's one of those things, you're between a rock and a hard place. What do you do with this? What do you do with that? And that's just something you got to settle with you and your God. Okay, verse 19. He loveth transgression that loveth strife. He that exalteth his gate seeketh destruction. Exalting his gate generally is talking about the political structure, as Lot sat in the gate. He that exalteth his gate himself seeketh destruction. Seeketh destruction because he's going to cut a deal. Compromise is the lifeblood of politics. 20. He that hath a froward heart findeth no good, and he that hath a perverse tongue falleth into mischief. Self-explanatory. He that begetteth a fool doeth it to his sorrow. And the father of a fool hath no joy. You'll never see a book written by Charles Manson's mother about her son. The son that I raised. You know, or Judas Iscariot's mother. It's a heartache. It takes them down into their grave with a heart problems. They see a fool. Do it to his own sorrow. 22, a merry heart doeth good like a medicine, but a broken spirit drieth the bones. Now there's one where you have a sense of humor. A merry heart. If you ever get a chance, read the testimony of Norman Cousins. Was a man who was dying of I don't know if he had cancer or whatnot, so I figured, well, since I'm dying, I'm going to laugh myself to death, and started watching a bunch of Three Stooges things and Laurel and Hardy and all that stuff, and he got better. Now, our outlook, people say things are, it's a matter of mind over matter. That's kind of a half-truth, because Satan said, I will exalt myself above the stars. Mind over matter, not in that case. Okay, but there is something about our mindsets where I'm not saying you have to have an optimistic outlook on things. My wife is usually an eternal optimist and I'm the eternal pessimist. It's good balance. But I think I'm working more on her. So I think she's becoming more my way, more pessimism and everything. But I guess you got to be more of a realist. But there's something about having an upbeat spirit about yourself. They say, you know, the silver lining in the cloud and all that kind of stuff. But the idea of a merry heart, you got to kind of look and laugh at things. There's Dummer Conley's, one of the deacons down in Rensselaer, he came from a large family over from the Bailey Corner area. And if you don't know anything about Bailey Corner area, you're missing out a little bit of something in your life. It's kind of a strange place. They have Bailey Baptist Church where they got spittoons in the pews and all that stuff. And, you know, it's kind of a unique area. It's kind of known for hillbilly heaven area. Delmer came from that family and they were United Baptists. United Baptists were Arminians. Then they had Hardshell Baptists over there who are Calvinists. So you got both things there. And Brother Delmer's parents, they named their children some strange names. And one of his oldest brothers' name is Finus. Well, Finus had a lot of health problems through the years, and he's got a sense of humor that doesn't quit. If you want to find any of the latest jokes, just go to the care center down in Rensselaer, find Finus. Sometimes he'll be sitting at the front door in his wheelchair. People walk in, and sometimes he'll say, "Welcome to Walmart." And then if you just start talking to Finus, he'll start telling you all the jokes he knows. Got both legs cut off. He's gone through surgeries after surgeries, and he's just got a sense of humor that doesn't quit. He's a character. And that's what sustains him. And, you know, he'd be in a hospital getting ready to have one leg cut off and then the next leg, and the nurses say, Finus, Finus. I've never heard that name before. And then he says, well, that's funny. I've heard it all my life. You know, and then they're chuckling about that. And so, you know, laughing about things, a sense of humor. There are two things that wicked men respect, and that's innocence and a sense of humor. Being able to laugh at things. Now, the sad thing is that a lot of your clowns in the circuses and a lot of your comedians are some of the most saddest people you ever meet. That happy smile is painted on. Their heart's broken in many cases. And the sad thing is about comedy is they often they start off clean comedy, but then it usually almost always degenerate to perversion. Bob Newhart started off good, but he ain't no good. Oh, Jonathan Winters wasn't too bad, but then he started gravitating. And I'm really dating myself going back to the Red Skelton days. But you see, people want to laugh. People want, you see, what the world's looking at us is they're going to try to see if we have some joy. And you go to the average church service, and it's about like a morgue, it's a mortuary. I think it's wrong to laugh in church. But yet you can laugh in your living room. Why can you laugh in the living room, laugh at Hollywood, but not laugh and enjoy yourself at church? So a lot of things there. A merry heart doeth good like a medicine, but a broken spirit drieth the bones. You know, some people, you know, they're sick because they want to be sick. There's absolutely nothing wrong with them. They just like the attention. You know, and it's a lot of it's attitude. You know, Jan, she was, you know, hadn't been sick for a long time. And then there, when we got back from Pennsylvania, we drove all night, so she was pretty worn out. And then she kind of got sick there for 3, 4, or 5 days. And then finally, one morning, she got up. She said, I just told myself I'm getting better. Well, she was better. But there is something to that as far as our mind. Learn to laugh, enjoy things, look at the funny side of things. A merry heart doeth good like a medicine. A broken spirit, that's morale. A broken spirit drieth the bones, just like arthritis. Okay, 23, a wicked man taketh a gift out of the bosom to pervert the ways of judgment. There's the American justice system right there. Money under the table. Bribe. Pervert and judgment. And that's a wicked judge that does that. Or a wicked attorney. Wicked attorneys, they have the answers. They know what they're supposed to do to get you out of your trouble, but they won't do it until you put some more money down on the table. And then all of a sudden their mind, you know, gets stopped, and all of a sudden more money comes down and say, oh, now I thought of an idea. Yeah. They got all these ideas in their head. They know what to do for every person in court should get the kind of defense that Kobe Bryant had. In fact, the prosecutor's job, according to the Indiana Supreme Court, is to defend the accused's rights as much beforehand as he would afterwards. That's what a prosecutor is supposed to do. In my case, if the prosecutor would have done her homework, she would have found out that I never practiced law one day in my life, and she would have never brought the charges. But they're too hasty because they get elected when they get convictions. Justice is not their motive. Convictions and plea bargains is the name of the game. And you see, that's a corrupt system. Actually, the system itself is good, but the people who are running it are corrupt. Verse 24, wisdom is before him that hath understanding, but the eyes of the fool are in the ends of the earth. The ends of the earth, he's looking at the worldly aspect of things. And notice there, if you have understanding, that guarantees you already have wisdom. The three steps are knowledge, wisdom, understanding. That's the three steps. The devil himself has knowledge and wisdom, but he has no understanding. Ezekiel 28 says that he is wiser than Daniel, but he doesn't have the understanding. Okay, so the idea, wisdom is before him that hath understanding, okay? Wisdom is God's part, knowledge is our part, understanding is both parts. Knowledge, it is my duty to study. Study to show thyself approved, a workman of God. That's a command. And then I get the knowledge, I get the knowledge, and then I say, God, please help me to have wisdom to know what I do with what I know now. If any man lack wisdom, ask of God. Okay, then God gives you the wisdom. And then you pray for the understanding as you continue to study. So all three of those go together. 25, a foolish son is a grief to his father and a bitterness to her that bare him. When young people rebel against their parents, when they do something really stupid, and everybody young does something stupid. We all do. They think that they're just going out having fun, just doing something dumb, and they just think that, it's just hurt, it may hurt them, may not. Their parents that love them, it tears their heart out. Many a mama has gotten premature gray hairs because of her worrying and praying for her son and daughter. Little children pitter-patter on your feet, but big children crush your heart. And so the thing is, you just keep praying and keep praying and keep praying and keep praying and never quit praying for them. I wish there's a switch that we could turn on, to make somebody spiritual. You can't make people spiritual. You just got to pray and pray and pray that God puts pressure on them, backs them in a corner where they become spiritual. So young people don't realize, a lot of times it's a shame that you don't understand, what you did to your children until they do something to you. Then you look back in your life and say, what was I doing to my parents? And things like that. Okay, so 26. Also to punish the just is not good, nor to strike princes for equity. Now, this is an unusual verse. To punish the just is not good. That's understandable. Okay? To punish the just is not good, nor to strike princes for equity. What's that mean? To strike, go on strike. To go on strike to who? Princes, political leaders. For what? For equality. It is not good, according to this proverb, it is not good for anybody to go to the government to demand equal rights. That throws a whole monkey wrench in the civil rights program. The civil rights, all civil rights acts are designed to do the exact opposite of what people say they're supposed to do. They create more racial tension. They don't stop any of it. It causes more of it. They say we don't want to judge a man by the color of his skin, but that's exactly what they're doing. They're judging a man by the color of his skin. The reason why it is not good to go to government to get your rights is because the only way the government can give you rights is to take them from somebody else. That's the only way. For somebody to go to the court, for some woman to go to the courts to bring a lawsuit against the JCs because the JCs was an all-men's group, they didn't get their rights. So they give the woman her rights, she can join the JCs, but they took it away from the men. You got some of these dumb, ignorant, stupid, foolish little girls who want to get on the boys' sports teams. Okay, let's put some boys in a girls' sports team. If they had a girl on a football team, if I was a coach, I would secretly tell every player, let her have it. Hit her as hard as you can. And when she's on the bottom of that pile, reach in her helmet, twist her lips, and pull her ears, and do everything you can. That's what they do in the bottom of them piles. We had an 8-man tackle football team out in Colorado, and one kid said, man, I was underneath that pile, that guy reached my helmet, he twisted my lips like this, man. And I said, what'd you do? He said, well, I got up, I went like this, and so now I got out of there. So the government cannot do two things, I mean, as far as rights and riches, unless they steal it from somebody else. They can't do that unless they steal it from somebody else. So that's where I have a footnote down there on that one. It is not good to go on strike or to demonstrate against the government for equal rights. It is an inferior race who desires civil rights because a superior race never mentions equal rights. And think on that one for a while. And no politician can give civil rights to anyone without taking the rights of another. Martin Luther King, real name was Michael, and he was a fornicating communist. And there are 14 file cabinet fulls of sexual orgies and communist dealings that Martin Luther King is associated with. And some judge sealed those file cabinets until the year 2000, I don't know, 25 or 14, I have no idea. What is it? 27? So much for trying to look at the evidence. And so, that's the way it goes in America. Okay, I heard the tape quit back there. So, have any questions or comments when we went through? Mm-hmm.